As a man, finding a truly great pair of pants can feel impossible. Some wrinkle the moment you sit down. Others look fine but don't travel well, don't move well, or completely lose their shape throughout the day. When you're flying, commuting, or packing light, most pants just aren't built for real life.
That's why there's Jack Archer. JackArcher.com makes the Jet Setter Tech Pant, designed to be the one pair of pants you actually need. Comfortable enough for travel, polished enough for work, and versatile enough for wherever the day takes you. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. With flexible stretch, customizable fit options, and thousands of five-star reviews, these are the pants you'll reach for every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order using code GETJACK at JackArcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at JackArcher.com for 15% off your first order.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Fourth and final hour, WEEI Afternoons. No Hart, no Fitzy, no Ted. That's okay. Dan Ball and Justin Turpin with you. Brian Frazoco back behind the glass. And you at 617-779-7937. Been a lot of fun here on this Monday. The guys will be back tomorrow with some thoughts on the Patriots offseason, decisions to be made. I'd imagine some conversations on is Tyreek Hill worth being signed, what will come up, and plenty of other things. So make sure you tune in tomorrow, 2 to 6. The full lineup is back, but Hart, Fitzy, and Ted back tomorrow on WEEI Afternoons. It's been a busy show. We got Olympics right off the rip into the Patriots, then into the Red Sox, and a full hour plus of Pure Hoops, the extended Pure Hoops, which was suggested to me on Friday by Andy to call it Pure Ball when you're dealing with me.
I like that.
Okay.
So we have Pure Hoops with Jones and Keefe, which is tomorrow, by the way, not on Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
And then Pure Ball when I'm with you. I like that.
Yeah.
So I'm down with that.
Just something to work, you know, better to workshop it on the air for everybody to hear and respond back on the text line and go, that's so stupid, don't do that, that kind of thing. So been a busy show. The headlines from which we will recap as part of The Drive.
This is The Drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep.
The top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. On WEEI Afternoons.
The Drive this week on WEEI Afternoons is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Proud to be local since 1860. I actually have to visit Shaw's after the course of the show because I didn't do my grocery shopping yesterday. Anyways, we began the show right off the rip as the U.S. women's team was finishing up their semifinal victory over Sweden, talking Olympics and talking hockey with Steve Dangle Glenn, who is a hockey YouTuber, the host of the Steve Dangle podcast. He's been covering the Maple Leafs in the NHL for years and years and years, and he has been streaming every single game for Team Canada during the course of the Olympics. So it was great to catch up with him. And as a tortured, beleaguered Toronto Maple Leafs fan, he has been force-fed Boston Bruins success since 2013 at the very, very latest. So when Steve Dangle sees the Bruins, he'd have any reason to talk negatively about the Bruins if he could, but he didn't do that, and here's what he said.
What have you made of their season so far and the success that they've been able to have?
It's a surprise unless you're a Leaf fan, and then it's completely predictable. Like,
very fair.
I knew they had playoff contention in them this year. I guess I'm surprised that it with such an exclamation mark.
Same.
How much of that would you credit to Marco Sturm?
So much. So incredibly much, and with the silver medal, so to speak, going to the assistant coach that they hired out of Dallas, Steve Spott, because he coaches their offense and coaches their power play. And their power play, despite having a significant lack of offensive talent behind Pastrnak and Geeky, is top five in the league. So they've put the puck in the net
at a level that I don't think anybody would have thought they could, to the point where the thing that has kept you from winning games a lot of time is you're either not getting saves or your defensive structure hasn't been good enough, when it was kind of supposed to be the opposite. So I thought I was not high on the Sturm signing, and I'm more than happy to say that I'm wrong. I thought it was a former Bruin in Cam Neely employing a former Bruin in Don Sweeney, who then decided to employ a former Bruin in Marco Sturm, and you just weren't going to get any modern-day modern-day NHL thinking. It was just going to be former Bruins trying to embrace the big, bad Bruin style of 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 years ago. And luckily, it has been exactly the opposite of that.
And you mentioned that big, bad Bruin style. I actually think it's a good thing that they brought it back. With the size and the physicality that this team has, it feels like they've gotten back to that a little bit. And just with the makeup of this roster, it was the right decision.
It was, and that's actually become another bright spot this year, that between Sean Corrali and Tanner Jeannot and Mikey Aizmont and Mark Kastelic, they have some tough dude. They have some grit, some grind, some of the compete level that you always talk about with the Bruins. They have that, but if it was only that, they'd be a bottom feeder this year, because you have to be fast, you have to be able to move the puck, and you have to be able to score in the modern day NHL. You have to be able to outscore your opponents, versus when you were doing it in the 2010s and before, you could just out grit grind your way to a 2-1 win, and Tim Thomas would stand on his head, and that's it. So you needed to have more of a balance of both than I thought that they did at the beginning of the year. But Sturm has brought this completely new vibe, this new level of kind of quiet intensity. He's not boisterous. He doesn't yell, but he'll pick his spots. There have been some behind-the-bee videos where he tears the paint off the wall. And I think it's kind of that mix between the two, combined with his experience working with young players in the minors, that's kind of made him the perfect fit for this year's group.
One more thought on the Bruins, too.
Yeah.
Currently hold the playoff spot.
They do.
Do they make the playoffs? I believe they're favorites to do it in the betting odds. I'd have to double check that. But
yeah.
Do they make the postseason after the trade deadline?
I think they do. I think they have kind of a half buy, half sell type deadline where you sell off guys that have expiring contracts. I think Arvidsson might be gone. I think one of either Mittelstadt or Zacha could be moved. But you can also bring in, with what Don Sweeney said, guys with long-term commitments, longer-term contracts. I'm curious about a guy like Vinny Trocheck in New York, if you can get them to retain a little bit off of him. Guys that will be there when I think your true window to win a championship begins, which is next year if you have a good offseason. But the teams ahead of the Bruins in their own division right now, other than Tampa, any one of them can fall apart. Buffalo, I think, is due for a dip. Montreal's young. There could be a dip there. Other than Tampa, who's kind of running away with the division, I do think they're a playoff team this year. And I never in a million years would have thought that, given the way their offseason went.
I stink record +115 to make the playoffs. Still pretty close, but
yeah,
a little bit of juice on there.
I'd take that, quite honestly. But yeah, it's been a revelation. And poor Steve, after you get Fraser Minton in a first-round pick that's top five protected, but looks like it's going to be right around that 6 to 7 to 8 kind of window in the draft. And Brandon Carlo just looks like a shell of himself. I mean, I could have told you he wasn't going to be the defensive savior that Toronto thought he was going to be last year, but he's fallen off a cliff. And it kind of makes me laugh, if I'm being completely honest with you. Okay, so that was our conversation on the Bruins as well as the Olympics. If you missed it, you can check it out on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search WEEI Afternoons. We then dovetailed into the New England Patriots and an interesting thought brought up by Andrew Callahan on the future of what the Patriots can bring.
The Patriots are going to be back in the Super Bowl because no team in the AFC is appreciably better positioned from a coach quarterback standpoint. You could even go the entire league than the Patriots with Mike Vrabel and Drake May. And you could argue the Chiefs or the Bills, at which point I would remind you that the point is no team is appreciably better positioned than the Patriots.
Brian Ferzocco, are the Patriots back and will they be back for the foreseeable future?
Well, you guys hit on the schedule earlier that the schedule next season will certainly not be as favorable for the Patriots as it was this year. I mean, just look at their away teams. It feels like there's really only two winnable games. But I'll remind you that those two winnable games are against the Dolphins and the Jets, who just so both happen to be in your division. And I just look at the rest of the division. I mean, the Carolina Panthers won a wretched NFC South last season with a record of 8-9. Now, I don't think 8-9 is going to get the Patriots the AFC East championship, but I do think you're not exactly going to have to be a 13-14 win team to win the division next year. You look at the Jets and Miami, they're both dumpster fires. The Jets kept one coach, and that was the head coach in Aaron Glenn, who I think we can all agree seems like he's in over his head. The Jets and the Dolphins still don't have an answer at quarterback, whereas you look at Buffalo, it feels like the only thing they do have is the quarterback, and it was a quarterback that sort of looked like a broken man after that Denver loss. I mean, you saw him at the podium crying, really felt like he knew that that was his best chance with no Patrick Mahomes, no Joe Burrow, no Lamar Jackson, that that season was his best chance to win a Super Bowl, despite the team not being as good as it's been around him in past seasons. Like, it felt like this was sort of their year, and they came up short. They kind of had an uninspiring hire at head coach, just sort of elevating Joe Brady. Feels like even Bills fans are sort of uninspired by it. Doesn't seem like they're huge fans of the hire. So I feel like, you know, will the Patriots record drop this upcoming season? I believe so. I don't think they're going to win 14 games this upcoming season in 2026, but I don't think they have to win the division. And you win the division, you get a home game. So I think the Patriots are going to be right back in it next season. Again, I don't think 14, but can 10, 11 games win you the division? I think so.
We also talked about this earlier. Like, they can win fewer games this year and be a better team than they were last season.
Yeah.
Like, just that's where the schedule kind of does play into account here. Like, just the nuance of it. Like, they can be a better team next year with fewer wins. And, again, like, you have Mike Vrabel and Drake May. Like, the arguably the best at what they do at their respective jobs. And I think if – at the very least, you'd argue top five at what they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have those two at the most important duo in all of sports, I'd argue, the coach and the quarterback in the NFL. So, yeah, the Patriots are here to stay.
Yeah, they are. And you're right in that you can solve the question that you have at offensive line however you see fit. You could shift Will Campbell over to guard, shift Jared Wilson to center, trade Garrett Bradbury, figure out a replacement for Morgan Moses. You could do any number of things to the offensive line. You could acquire a pass rusher, and, you know, you could reset your wide receiving room to where Stephon Diggs is no longer your number one pass catcher, and you could still be a 9 to 10 to 11 win team. But Brian, you're right. I mean, the division right now is once again at an all-time susceptible to where you could be just sneaking your way over 500 and still be the division winner, the number four seed, and get a home game. And then once you get this group back into the playoffs, given the experience that you just gained for so many guys this year, who knows what happens when you get into the playoffs in an AFC that, as we talked about, is pretty wide open, not just in the AFC East, but the AFC as a whole is kind of still there for the taking.
It just feels like, and obviously free agency and the draft are still a ways away. Doesn't it already feel like the other AFC East teams are getting worse, right? Like, the Bills sort of lost that stability with the coach, and I think they had their issues with Sean McDermott, but it feels like they already sort of are kind of regressing a little bit. The Dolphins just sold half their team today, or released half their team today. The Jets are keeping their head coach, who seems like he doesn't have a clue. Like, free agency, the draft, none of the offseason has even started yet, and I feel like these other teams are getting worse, and the Patriots haven't even gotten better yet.
Whenever the Jets are brought up and we look back at the 2025 Jets, I think of two things. One, when they had the kickoff return in like week two and Aaron Glenn was like miming down the sideline. He's like dancing down the sideline. I'm pretty sure they were losing at the time too, which makes it even more funnier.
Yeah.
And the fact that they went an entire NFL season without an interception.
Yeah.
Like, that you can't stress how ridiculous that is enough. You played an entire season and did not have an interception. 18 weeks now. 18-week season now.
You know that level of bad, that's impressive?
That's the Jets.
That's the Jets.
And they've just been stuck in this miserable pit for so long.
And they're keeping the defensive-minded head coach who led them to a season who didn't get a single interception.
That's the best part. And he played defensive back in the league.
Right.
They didn't have an interception all year long.
I think a third of the league changed head coaches this offseason, and the New York Jets were not one of those
teams. It felt like he was almost a sure thing to go. I don't know what Woody Johnson does with that team, but, like, man, he's just ran them into the ground. It feels like they're just broken beyond repair. At this point, they're cursed.
And you pointed to the right reason why. Woody Johnson gets an F from the players on the report card, then cries to the league about it and gets the report cards banned from being public.
That's so embarrassing.
That's the leadership of the Jets. You want to figure out why the Jets are the way that they are? It's because that's what's setting your organizational tone. So that was our conversation on the Patriots. Thank you to Andrew Callahan for that clip to lead into that conversation. Last and certainly not least, Tom Werner spoke to the Boston Globe. That was fine. Sam Kennedy spoke to reporters who had cameras and microphones. It's something I saw this on Twitter. It's something about that bench, that picnic table bench in the midst of the Red Sox spring training facility that just gets the most out-of-pocket nonsense before you even break camp to start the season. As part of that out-of-pocket nonsense, Sam Kennedy said this about Rafael Devers.
Well, you can't replace someone like Rafi. He's just, you know, as an individual, exceptional hitter. And so we got to find other ways.
Pete Alonso.
Oh, wow.
Alex Bregman. Go down the line.
Wow. Those are two guys that what do they do? They hit home runs.
Exceptionally good hitters,
leaders, positive members of society as well as the society in your clubhouse. And
do they just pick up a glove?
Apparently, that's what they should do, according to Tom Warner, the shut up and dribble equivalent out of Tom
that
Warner's mouth.
That was a banger. That had some teeth to it, that quote.
But I came away from that, and this kind of came up in discussion on my show yesterday afternoon. You have to take into account when the Red Sox make a move or the Red Sox say something to the media or anything frontward facing, public facing happens with the Boston Red Sox. The plane of existence and reality that their front office is working on is simply different from the people who attend their game. You see a certain thing. I see a certain thing. We perceive the Red Sox as being a team with a deficiency in their lineup that doesn't hit home runs and that has a weakened bullpen and is at best third place in the American League East, and a team that I think has a better chance of finishing fourth in that division than they do second. That's what I see. That's what you see. What they see is a cash machine that continues to spit out money, and the more efficient that they run, the better it will ultimately be for their jobs and their security within the organization. And just don't forget that when you see or you hear anything related to this franchise.
It just makes it even more frustrating that all year long, Craig Breslow was saying, we're prioritizing a power bat. We need a power bat. And they're sitting on these $300 million that they saved in by trading Rafael Devers for what was a salary dump. Yeah. It was totally a salary dump, and it's very obvious that only one of the players they acquired in the trade still remains here. Right. It was a salary dump, and there's no arguing that. Now, you didn't allocate that money elsewhere, and you could have. Pete Alonso was half of that. It's like 5 for $155. Like, that's a deal the Red Sox make, but then they say he's too old. But then they go out and sign Wilson Contreras, who's older.
Yeah.
It's just the mixed signals and the lying is just so frustrating.
Well, but there's the difference in reality, right? You say they didn't reallocate that money. They will turn around and tell you that between Garrett Crochet's extension, Roman Anthony's extension, and some bit pieces that, and Ranger Suarez and some bit pieces that they signed around him, that they did reallocate that money. So, the problem is, even if that's technically true, you didn't actually do a one-for-one swap power hitter for power hitter, so you left your roster worse because of it.
So they say this all went to plan the way that they wanted to, and Devers was, and whatever, picked up his glove, in the word of Warner there. Say it went to plan. Devers picks up his glove, and he continues to be a great player, great hitter. Crochet, Cy Young candidate, and Roman Anthony comes up and does what he does. What do you do? What are you just not going to pay Roman Anthony, or you're not going to extend Garrett Crochet?
Right.
Like, that was part of the plan. Like, you lucked out that, not even lucked out, like, you got off the hook, I guess, of the salary that you didn't want to pay.
Correct.
And there's no defending it. Like, what were you going to do? Were you not going to pay those guys? Like, it's just, it's the lying, and it's the mixed reality. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, then the pendulum would swing. Then they wouldn't have signed Ranger Suarez, and they'd turn around and try to tell you that they'll find other ways to fill in that number two starter, just like they're doing right now with their lineup not having Bregman. 617-779-7937. Before we get to trending with Brian, Jay is in Portland. Hi, Jay.
Hey, guys. Thanks for my call.
Yes, sir.
What a scam. What a scam.
Amen.
Seriously. It's a scam. He is such a salesman, telling us that he's going to do one thing and he does another. And he sounds like a salesman. He sounds really, really bad when he's letting us know that you guys are documenting everything perfectly. And next thing you know, we get this Caleb Durbin. This guy may turn out to be a stud. Who knows? But he is just a salesman, and I'm sick and tired of it. I'd rather have someone in there like a Lucchino or – who's the guy? Dombrowski. Let's get someone there who can tell us the truth. We're not stupid fans here.
That's the thing, Jay, and I'm sorry I hit that quickly before you were done with your point because we got to get to trending, but that is the ultimate refrain, is that you're talking down to a fan base that is I would probably argue is the most intelligent among baseball fans.
Yes.
At least from the amount of people that are in the fan base. And yeah, we're biased and we are both Red Sox fans, so I'm going to say that. But it's a battle-tested, battle-hardened fan base that has now become accustomed to success. And your financial workings are also public information that we can all see, that we all talk about here. So you're intentionally spinning a false narrative to a fan base that isn't dumb enough to just take what you're saying at face value, because it's been proven not to be true. And that call was specific about Sam Kennedy. That's what the log line was. So that's who he was talking about. But again, I would caution, focus your energy just as much as you do on Sam, above him and below him. And that is where it should be targeted. But we'll leave that conversation there, because Adam Kaufman of Nesson will join us after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending.
Buying pants shouldn't take this much effort. Too many options, inconsistent sizing, and styles that don't work across your day. You want something comfortable, sharp, and reliable without guessing, returning, or buying five different pairs. That's why there's Jack Archer.
Yes, jackarcher.com simplifies everything with the Jet Setter Tech Pant. One versatile pair designed to take you from work to weekend without missing a beat. Easy to wear, easy to style, and easy to shop for. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. They stretch, breathe, and hold their shape, giving you a consistent fit and polished look every time. Backed by thousands of five-star reviews, they're the dependable pants you'll reach for daily.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
You know your customers. Ralph likes his coffee black on Fridays, but Mondays he takes a little cream. Jennifer comes in every 3 years when her lease is up to get the newer and better model. And for some reason, pepperoni pizza sells like crazy on Friday nights. Who knew? At Odyssey, we have the expertise to get your media plan done right. With ads like you're hearing right now, to targeted social media campaigns, search engine optimization, and location-based advertising. Advertise with Odyssey and help us grow your business. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
If you missed any part of the show,
or to have it delivered to your phone daily,
subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast on the Odyssey app
or wherever you find your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Back here on WEEI Afternoons, Dan Ball and Justin Turpin with you. That's Brian Frazoco on the rejoins as we're back with you here just a little after 5:30. And we go to the guest line. We're joining us now, a host on Nesson's. Boston has entered the chat. You can also catch him across the betting sphere as well, Adam Kaufman. Adam, Dan Ball and Justin Turpin with you. How are you?
What's up, boys? How we doing?
All is well. All is well. So you know the experience of sharing a studio with Justin Turpin. How has that experience been for you?
Oh, it's inspiring, honestly.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, I want to be at my best when I am sitting alongside Justin. That's all that's top of mind when I'm doing it.
That's fair. I'm right there with you, and I appreciate that sentiment, and I made Terp blush in the process, which was my only goal. But a lot to get to on the Boston sports front, beginning with the New England Patriots, still kind of in the wake of the Super Bowl loss for the Patriots. Adam, if you're looking at the potential blame pie for the Patriots for what went wrong in the Super Bowl, who had the worst day for this group, and what stood out to you there?
Yeah, I think it was just kind of multifaceted, guys. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer. I don't really get so much into the blame pie thing because I just think there were so many parts that were, you know, equally and, you know, in a complementary way, albeit the opposite connotation, problematic, right? Like, you look at Josh McDaniels, I thought the game plan for the offense was atrocious. He just, look, I'm not looking to get rid of Josh. I think that he's an exceptional offensive coordinator, but he did not have a good day against a very imposing Seattle defense, historically good by metrics, and an incredible front that absolutely terrorized Drake May, who, again, is part of that list. Now, you can point to the shoulder. You could point to, you know, did nerves get the best of him, at least for a stretch in that game, maybe the first half before he kind of woke up a little bit, statistically anyhow, in that second half. You know, the offensive line comes into play, and most especially Will Campbell. He gave up 14 pressures in that game, which is the most that any left tackle has allowed in any game the entire year, let alone specific to the Patriots or the postseason. I mean the whole year. But how much of that was Campbell and being a turnstile? How much of that was the torn ligament there in his knee? You know, so you can point to just so many different things that were issues that all relate to one another. If Campbell's better, May is probably better. If the game plan is better, both are probably better. And so it was just a truckload of issues on the offense. I didn't have any issue really with the defense. I thought the defense was largely great across that game for New England and was the reason that, at least mathematically, the Pats were within reach of that thing for a good chunk of the game. May not have felt that way, and I was in the building. It definitely did not feel that way. But 3-0, 6-0, 9-0, 12-0, like, there were so many instances where the Patriots, it's like, okay, if they can just string together that one drive and score a touchdown, maybe you take a lead or you cut it to, you know, one possession, then you get a stop and you have an opportunity. And we kind of saw it at a point. It's 12-0. They turn the ball over. It becomes 19-0, but they score a touchdown. They get a quick stop inside like 60 seconds. They get the ball back, and you're trying to convince yourself, boy, if you make it 19-14 here, you still have 6-7 minutes left. Anything is possible, but no, there's another turnover, and that sealed their fate. So there were a lot of issues that ultimately a lot of people are just going to point to that game now and say, see, you know, it's they're who we thought they were, right? It was an easy schedule, and when they had to compete, they couldn't.
You mentioned the 14 pressures allowed by Will Campbell in the Super Bowl. I just want to take that a step further with the 29 he allowed in the postseason, the most ever recorded in a single postseason by Next Gen Stats. What do you think his future is? Do you chalk a lot of that up to the knee that obviously he was dealing with and the competition? Like, is he the future at left guard or left tackle, rather? How do you feel about that?
So maybe I'm naive, but I do put a lot of it on the knee. I do. I think that this is someone who really had a very good regular season before the injury, and stats back that up. And then he comes back, obviously, from the injury, and at the tail end of the regular season on into the playoffs, it didn't look good. And you gave out some of the numbers there, and some of that is the quality of defenses they were going against. Remember, that was four top six defenses between the Chargers and the Texans and the Broncos and then the Seahawks that they faced during that playoff run. I mean, that was historically difficult. And so I think that comes into play there. But I'm just – you drafted this guy fourth overall to be your left tackle in spite of, is he big enough? Are the arms too short? All of these things. You invested in him at that position to, you know, not be your left guard or not be just a guy along the line. It was specific to be, this is Drake May's protector. This, you know, Will Campbell with that famous draft night quote of I will die for him. You know, like, that's my quarterback kind of thing. And so I'm not punting on it. You know, I get right, get healthy in the offseason. Let's see what it looks like next year. Now, if next year's a problem, sure, you've got a decision to make, obviously. That's not to say you kind of gift him the job as it sort of felt like in that first press conference of the offseason Mike Vrabel did. I think you do need to make him compete for it and consider your external options. You don't have anything in-house, but you have to consider your external options. If there's, you know, a good free agent that's worth paying and worth looking into, but I'm not looking to move on from Will Campbell at left tackle. And I, as someone who obviously did not play the game at any sort of high level and never, you know, played that position, I defer to the people who did. And you hear a lot of people right now in, you know, among athletes in media, retired or current, saying it's too quickly. It's too soon to move on from him. You got to get another look at it.
Adam Kaufman of Nesson with us here on WEEI as part of our drive home here on WEEI Afternoons. And this drive home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Adam, to switch gears just for a moment, as we talk about health and return to play and things of that nature on the Boston Celtics, all of a sudden now we seem to have a return to play plan for Jason Tatum to hopefully rejoin this group as soon as the first week of March. So what can the Celtics accomplish once Jason Tatum is back in the fold?
Well, I think they can keep accomplishing what they've accomplished so far, but at a higher level. This is a team that is sitting 5.5 games out of the top spot behind Detroit in the Eastern Conference in what's a you know, a generally underwhelming Eastern Conference. I'm not going to sit here and say it's trash. I mean, it is trash compared to the West, but it's not an atrocious conference. I mean, you can look at it and say there are a handful of teams that are capable of making a run and winning it, whether you're talking about, obviously, the Pistons, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Cavaliers. I mean, there are teams that you have to look at and take seriously. But to me, if you're adding a top five player in the league, and that's not to assume he is going to be 100% superstar Jason Tatum coming back. In fact, I think it would be foolish to believe that. But if he comes back at 70-75% of himself and can impact winning in ways that they have so desperately needed in terms of running the offense potentially through him again, obviously what he does as a rebounder and to a degree a rim protector and just someone who can alter shots on the inside and kind of be a de facto center option on a team that is, you know, a little thin at that position and in terms of size overall, I there's no reason that I should not believe that adding Jason Tatum doesn't support the case of Boston can go out there and represent the East in the NBA Finals. Now, do I think that Boston would beat an Oklahoma City, a San Antonio, Houston, you know, Denver? Like, no, I don't. I mean, the West is clearly better and is definitely top heavy in terms of the first four or five spots, but you got to get there first. I mean, it's the same thing with the Patriots, right? Like, this, everyone was saying all year long how good the NFC is, how weak the AFC is. Fine. Somebody's still got to win it. Somebody's still got to get there to at least have an opportunity. And there's no reason to believe that Boston with Tatum, and even potentially without Tatum, couldn't be good enough to reach the Eastern Conference Finals and then the NBA Finals.
What are your thoughts on the Vucevic trade? I think it's only obviously been three games, so it's a small sample size, but I think what he brings to this team and the unique skill set that they really haven't had out of their bigs when you look at his ability to post up and pass the ball, two double-doubles in three games here. Just what do you make of him and his fit with this team?
So I guess I answer that in two different ways. The first, as you noted, I think you can look at what we've seen so far. It's been successful. He's looked good. And he's addressed multiple needs, whether as a, you know, big man who can space the floor, shoot from distance, obviously rebound, a huge area of weakness throughout the year, offensive rebound as well. He can, you know, just add size and some versatility and additional scoring punch, even though to some degree that's a little bit of a trade-off because you lose Anthony Simons in the process,
right,
just in terms of the scoring, certainly not size and rebounding and things along those lines. That's all worked out, and I think he is a great fit. Where I go the other way a little bit is if we were having this conversation before the trade deadline and you said, hey, you know, Adam, how do you feel about adding Vucevic from Chicago? Would that be a move that you could get behind? I would say no, that's not the move that I want to make. And the reason for that is very simply, it's not a knock on Vuce. I like Vuce the player. It's a knock on, I'm thinking about not only this year, I'm thinking about next year. I'm thinking about 2 years out. I'm thinking about the next iteration of what a Boston Celtics championship team looks like. And if I'm, and I know they got the, you know, another big TPE that they can theoretically use. And a lot of the time, most of the time, these things aren't used. But for me, you know, I wanted Claxton. I wanted Zubats. I wanted, you know, a guy who's in around 30, maybe even a little younger than 30, not in his mid-30s, who's also not a rental, who's going to be around for the next year or two, as opposed to also expiring at the end of this year, like Simons. So that was my hesitation. That was why, you know, when we're doing our show and talking about all the different theoretical trade options, his name kept coming up, and so I can get the words out, and I kept saying, eh, I don't know, for all the reasons that I just outlined to you. So he's here. Maybe they re-sign him. Who knows? We'll see how that plays itself out. But if he is gone at the end of the year and this team doesn't really do anything, then to me that just, there's a little bit of what was the point you could have maybe added differently.
Well, Adam, we'll get you out on this. You mentioned your show. So what's been going on with you and your group over at Nesson, and where else can we follow along with you?
Sure. Well, Twitter's the best place to get me just in general, Adam M. Kaufman. I think that's the same handle on Instagram, but I don't use it as much. But over on Nesson, Boston has entered the chat. It's Monday to Friday, 4 to 6. great crew of people involved. Justin certainly has popped on with us from time to time, given his insights and analysis, and some of the other crew from EEI as well. And yeah, we have a good time. It's pretty laid back. Matter of fact, we had Rod Bradford on with us earlier today, talking a little Red Sox, and I imagine that will probably make its way to the Nesson YouTube page so people can check that out and get some even more. If you can handle more Bradfo and more baseball isn't boring, you can get some additional spring training thoughts from down there.
Well, there is never too much Bradfo in our world here. That is for darn sure. But Adam, we appreciate the time, wishing you continued success with the show, and we hope to do it again soon.
Appreciate you, boys. Anytime.
Thanks,
yes, sir. That is Adam Coffin joining us here on WEEI. Some thoughts on the Patriots and the Celtics. We'll react to some of those. And remembering a memorable actor that passed away earlier today. We'll finish up with that next.
One of these guys covered running backs in the NFL.
There's a football player, that Ted Johnson. I'm really impressed with him.
The other two covered his games.
Y'all are not on that level, and he will destroy you. And that might be part of what he needs to bring to this team.
Afternoon.
As a man, finding a great pair of pants feels harder than it should. Some look sharp but feel stiff. Others are comfortable but wrinkle, stain, or lose their shape by noon. And if you're working, traveling, or constantly on the move, most pants just cannot keep up. That's where Jack Archer comes in.
JackArcher.com delivers one pair of pants designed for real life. Whether it's golf with the guys or date night with someone special, these pants will keep you comfortable and looking polished wherever the day takes you.
That's right, Mark. The Jack Archer Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built to hold its shape all day. With customizable fit options and multiple colors, these are the one pair of pants you'll want to wear every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at JackArcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at JackArcher.com for 15% off your first order.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
Hey, Dad, I didn't know if I wanted to talk to you about Sam.
Sammy's a good boy.
Yeah. He hasn't been playing much lately, and I didn't know if...
Stop right there. I agree with you. I got some great news. He's going to get a lot more playing time now.
Dad, thanks. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Trade him to the Tigers.
You traded your own grandson?
Well, I didn't actually get anything for him. You know that cost $400?
Justin Turpin, can you name that movie?
I can't.
Man, really?
What is it?
It's one of the most underrated Will Ferrell movies of all time. It's a soccer movie called Kicking and Screaming.
Oh, you know, I've seen that, but it's not one that I can quote line for line. So, yes, no, I've seen that movie, but, like, it's not one that I could, you know, pull a line out
of.
Yeah, so, I do like that movie.
Yeah, so Will Ferrell plays the character Phil Weston, and Robert Duvall plays his dad, Buck Weston. So that's a conversation that's going on. They've traded Sam to the really bad team and, you know, whatever, going from there. But I say that as part of Odds and Ends here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K to donate your car today. Robert Duvall, and I'll read this directly from the Associated Press, the Oscar-winning actor of matchless versatility and dedication, whose classic roles included the intrepid consigliere of the first two Godfather movies and the over-the-hill country music singer in Tender Mercies, has died at age 95. Duvall died, quote, peacefully at his home Sunday in Virginia, according to an announcement from his publicist from a statement posted on his Facebook page by his wife, Luciana Duvall. Quote, to the world, he was an Academy Award-winning actor, a director, a storyteller. To me, he was simply everything. His passion for his craft was matched only by his deep love for characters, a great meal, and holding court. For each of his many roles, Bob gave everything to his characters and to the truth of the human spirit they represented. Just a truly legendary actor. And it was interesting how they put it in this AP story, and I hadn't really thought of it that way. not necessarily a guy who gets the leading roles, who is known as the Tom Hanks, even the Marlon Brando face of a franchise, but a guy who, when you see him, you know it's going to be a good character. You know there's probably a chance that you're going to laugh, with kind of the dry sense of humor, and just one of the all-time greats when it comes to character actors and guys who play quietly important roles in films. And I'm probably one of the few that sees his face and first goes, oh, that's Buck Weston, and he's got balls. But that's always what I'm going to think about Robert Duvall.
I do love that movie. That unlocked a memory that I kind of forgot I had.
Yeah, go watch it tonight.
I know, maybe I will. You know, that is, I would agree, one of the more underrated Will Ferrell movies.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a legend.
Yeah,
what,
95 years old, man. And a lot of people will attach him to the incredible role he played in The Godfather. But gone, but certainly not forgotten with the legacy that Robert Duvall leaves. But we're coming up on the end. And Adam Kaufman, great to catch up with him. Appreciate the time. He's part of Nesson's Boston has entered the chat. Pretty optimistic on what the Celtics can accomplish, even if maybe Vucevic wasn't the guy he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that they weren't really going to get anyone else, right?
Yeah.
It made sense from the financial aspect of where they were trying to go things. But, like, yeah, no, I totally get his point where you're trying to build more for the future. But I think Vucevic could be in the future. I think we were talking about this a little bit where, you know, before when they traded Simons, possibly getting him back at the mid-level, around $14 million. I think that's what you can get Vucevic at.
Justin Turpin, a lot of fun, my friend. Thank
you for
joining.
That was a blast. Thank you for having me.
Hey, well, hopefully we can do this again. So the guys are back tomorrow on WEEI Afternoon, so tune in 2 o'clock. Hart and Fitz, you'll have you. Ted Johnson in at 3. Brian Frazoco, great job back behind the glass. Always a pleasure, my friends. We will be back in the normal form on WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Ted. I'll have you on the updates, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great night. See you.
Should be cold. It's hockey.
As a man, finding a great pair of pants feels harder than it should. Some look sharp but feel stiff. Others are comfortable but wrinkle, stain, or lose their shape by noon. And if you're working, traveling, or constantly on the move, most pants just cannot keep up. That's where Jack Archer comes in.
JackArcher.com delivers one pair of pants designed for real life. Whether it's golf with the guys or date night with someone special, these pants will keep you comfortable and looking polished wherever the day takes you.
That's right, Mark. The Jack Archer Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built to hold its shape all day. With customizable fit options and multiple colors, these are the one pair of pants you'll want to wear every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Hey, this is John Rothstein, the host of Inside College Basketball Now, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, reminding you that our show is going to ramp up over the next 2 months. That's because we're counting down to Selection Sunday and March Madness. We will be coming to you each and every week with multiple episodes featuring exclusive interviews with the biggest and best names in the sport. It's the all-you-can-eat buffet for college basketball junkies everywhere. Follow and listen to Inside College Basketball Now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.